Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, and this hour, True History, featuring baseball. Later on, it's the Cavalcade of America with the story of Babe Ruth, excerpts of Behind the Mic and Can You Imagine That, but first a broadcast of The Dizzy Dean Show, produced out of WMAQ in Chicago and relayed nationally via NBC. This episode was first heard on August 21st, 1948.
Well, here he is again, folks. Dizzy Dean, brought to you by the makers of Johnson's Wax for Carnu, the wax-fortified auto polish that cleans and polishes your car in one easy application.
Howdy, folks. Say, Frank, I wish you'd explain something to me. What does that wax-fortified mean exactly?
Well, I'm glad you're curious, Dizzy. And this is Frank Eschen, happy to satisfy Dizzy Dean's curiosity. It means the polish is fortified or made more effective, Diz, by the wax that is one of the ingredients.
And that means fortified, Frank.
Yes, Dizzy. And here perhaps is a better way to explain it to you. You remember when you were a youngster, you probably could throw pretty hard. You probably were a good pitcher right from the start with that strong arm.
Yes, Frank, it was some arm. But don't worry, I'm not going to tell you that I knocked squirrels out of trees left-handed so I wouldn't bruise them up too much.
Thanks for passing that one, Jerome. But we were having a lesson on the word fortified. Well, even with that strong arm, you became a better pitcher when you learned to throw a curve. In other words, the acquisition of a curve fortified you as a pitcher. Fortified. See, Jerome?
Now I know what you mean, Frank. I like to learn them things, but I was pretty well fortified, Frank, with that just fastball. If anybody should drive up in a nice, slick, shiny car and ask you...
Then you really were fast, Diz, huh?
I'll say I was fast. Boy, I wish I could throw that hard one now. I'll never forget a game back in them good old days. This story will give you an idea of how fast a man can be, Frank.
An anecdote, I dare say?
Right you are, Frank. We was playing the Phillies in late season doubleheader, and along about the eighth inning of the second game, it was a cinch the umpires would call the game. Bruzy Ogrodowski was my catcher, and he kept telling me he couldn't see the ball any too good himself, and he didn't figure the batters could see it either. Well, we had a one-run lead, but with two out, the Phillies get a couple of bloopers, and Dick Bartell comes to the plate. He was a tricky hitter, a guy with a lot of courage, and he was swinging from his heels up there. I got a couple of strikes on him, though, and then Ogie comes running out to the mound and says, I got an idea, Dizzy. I'll keep this here ball after just pretending to give it to you. Then you rear back and go through your pitching motion, and I'll do the rest. I told Ogie, umpire Cy Furman would call a balk on me, sure. But Ogie says, what's the difference? They'll only move three runners to second and third. But I've always wanted to try this here trick. Well, old Diz was never one to tell anybody they couldn't have no fun as they went through life. So I take my position, look back at second and over to first, take my stretch, and wham, I pretend to let go with a fast one. Ogie pops the ball into his mitt. Umpire Furman kind of blanks a little, but he calls her strike three and you're out. Bartell starts to kick up a fuss, but Furman interrupts him. Dick, that was right through the middle, Furman tells him. And then Bartell says, Cy, I know doggone well now that you are blind. That pitch was a foot outside.
That settles it, Diz. That settles it. I'll admit that you must have been well fortified as a pitcher in those days with that fastball. Right now, how are you fortified with information for rising young America on the baseball diamond? It's time, Coach Dean, to give out with counsel for the kiddies.
And I always enjoy this part of the program, Frank. It takes me back to the days when I was playing sandlot ball and dreaming of the big leagues. I'm going to talk to the boys about hitting today.
Dizzy Dean, the pitcher, talks about hitting? Well, I'll admit you were a fair sticker, Jerome.
Yes, and I'd have been a better hitter, Frank, if I hadn't been a pitcher. You know pitchers don't get a chance to play every day. It takes daily practice to develop batting power and skill, and that's exactly the point I want to make for you young ball players right now. Just one point today. Boys today are just the same as they were when I was a youngster. They go out to the ball field, and they're so anxious to get that game started that they don't bother to take no practice at all. Did you ever see a bunch of kids go to the trouble of having batting practice before a game? They may warm up their throwing arms a little and have fielding practice, but not much of that, and very little batting practice. You ain't going to develop into hitters that way. Here's what I want you to do. If you've got a game scheduled for next Saturday, I want you all to get together Friday afternoon and take 1 hour of batting practice, or 2 hours, or maybe 3 hours. Just hit till you're plumb worn out. There must be a couple of the boys with pretty good control. Let them do the pitching. They don't have to be pitchers. Control is the main thing. Just have them throw the ball over the plate with some speed. Not too much. Don't try to throw curves. The idea is practice hitting that ball. And don't try to hit home runs every time up there. Just practice meeting the ball. Practice swinging only at the strikes. In that way, you'll sharpen that batting eye and get better acquainted with that strike zone. As far as young batter's stance is concerned, don't worry about that. I've talked to some of the best hitters in the big leagues ever seen. Roger Hornsby, Joe Medrick, Bill Terry, and Stan Musial. And they'll all tell you the same thing. Be comfortable up there at the plate. You may want to sprat a little, or you may want to be back far in the batter's box. When it comes to batting, just be natural up there. In other words, the way you feel good hitting, that is the way for you to hit. But practice is the big thing. And if you boys would just take about 2 days a week at batting practice, you'll find you're getting a whole lot more fun out of your actual games, because you'll be hitting that old apple against the fences and a lot more oftener.
Well, Diz, I know you enjoy giving that advice to the youngsters. I see a twinkle in your eye.
Yes, Frank, when I was saying the kids would get a lot more fun out of their games, a story popped into my head.
And when a story pops into Dizzy Dean's head, it just must pop out. So pop away, Jerome.
We was playing an exhibition game in Florida, Frank, and it was really too early to schedule any games. We'd been in camp only a few days, and the pitchers weren't putting nothing on the ball. It was over at Avon Park, where the fences was about a mile from home plate, and if a ball happened to get past an outfielder, it just rolled and rolled. Well, I was pitching and just lobbing the ball over the plate. We was playing a farm club, Columbus or Rochester, and was having a lot of fun seeing the kids hit. Terry Moore was out in center field, and he really was having a workout, chasing him to right center and then to left center. Finally, after retrieving one of them long ones, instead of throwing the ball in, Terry just carried it. He walked all the way into second base and then to the mound. He handed me the ball and said, hey, Diz, please walk a couple of them guys, will you, till I get my wind back.
Well, from where I'm sitting, Dizzy, the way it looks to me, you were trying to give Terry and the other outfielders a real workout. You know, you had a reputation of not barring your friends when you were looking for a chance to play a joke. I heard all about what you did to your radio engineer in New York last summer.
Did you hear that one, Frank? Well, I might as well tell it before you do. We were traveling with the Browns broadcasting their ball games play-by-play, and we had to take our engineer along with us on this trip. I guess maybe that was because they didn't have none in Boston or Philadelphia who could talk my kind of English. Anyhow, we had a fine young fellow named Stingle as our radio engineer, and we nicknamed him Casey, after my old friend. Well, we put Stingle up in fine style with a private room in the New Yorker Hotel. Casey was bragging about having a fine room, but said he wasn't used to being that high up. He was on the 32nd floor. Well, a big storm come up that night. It was blowing to beat the band, and the lightning was flashing and the thunder was rolling. Me and Johnny O'Hare was rooming together, and the storm woke us up, and we knew doggone well the Stinger was woke up, too. So Johnny gets on the telephone, changes his voice so it sounds like a room clerk, and tells Stinger that on account of the severe electrical storms and the danger in Bob, all guests above the 25th floor was requested to kindly get dressed and spend the balance of the night in the lobby. We didn't think Casey would fall for it, but he did. The next day, he told us how he spent most of the night on a divine in the lobby.
Jerome, that's not a kindly way to treat a friend. But if you want to reverse that and really be of service to all your friends, I've got an idea.
What's that, Frank?
Well, do you know who some of your biggest fans are?
Who are you thinking of, Frank?
Automotive and hardware dealers and service station men. A lot of them are able to hear this program and listen in on ball games while they're working or between jobs. They're real friends of yours, Diz, and real friends of Johnson's Carnew, too.
Well, I reckon they know most of us are about cleaning up the old family cart wagon. We like Sunday shine, but we don't like Saturday shining.
That's the ticket, Diz. And they know that Johnson's Carnew solves that problem. You see, men, Johnson's wax-fortified Carnew cleans and polishes your car in one easy application. Just rub it on, let it dry to a white powder, and wipe it off. And when you rub it on, Carnew's five cleaning ingredients cut right through that sticky road film that water won't touch. You know, that road film made up of oil, bugs, exhaust fumes, and all the other things that stick to the finish of your car. Then when you wipe it off, wax-fortified Carnew polishes your car, gives your car a high, bright luster that sparkles from bumper to bumper. And so if you like to tool down the road in a car that glistens in the sunlight, if you like to, how did you say that before, Diz?
If you like Sunday shine, but you don't like Saturday shining.
That's it. Just ask your service station attendant or other dealer for Johnson's Wax Fortified Carnew. That's C-A-R-N-U, Carnew. And now, Dizzy Dean, we come to the mailbag. Frank Winchell of Jacksonville, Florida, recalls that the Cardinals of your day were about the most colorful in baseball history. He wants you to tell him a little about that color.
Frank, there was so much color on that ball club, I don't know where to start. I'm afraid I'll have to divide this up in a couple of installments. First of all, when you talk about color, I think of Pepper Martin. I guess he really was the top man in that gas house gang business, Frank. He looked like a gas houser. You could pretty him up in the clubhouse, but after 5 minutes on the field, he'd be dust from head to foot. Laugh was just one laugh after another to Pepper. He'd be sitting on the bench, and all of a sudden, he'd start laughing. And then he'd tell us what he'd done. One of his tricks was to carry sneeze powder around with him. One night in New York, he saw a nice old couple sitting together in the lobby, minding their own business. The old gentleman was reading the paper. So Pepper goes up on the mezzanine. That's the balcony above the lobby floor, Frank.
Yes, I saw one once, Jerome.
Well, anyhow, Pepper drops some sneeze powder so it lands on the old gentleman's paper. In a few minutes, the man is letting out one sneeze after another. It was red-hot July weather in New York, but the man's wife turned to him and said, "I told you, Roscoe, that you should have put on a heavier suit than that," and that made the evening perfect for Pepper Martin. Another time, we was on our way to Brooklyn in the subway. Pepper edges toward the front of the car, and as he opens the door, letting in a big windy draft, he flips some sneeze powder up in the air. Before you know it, the whole car is sneezing. Boy, that Pepper would drive you crazy.
He sure would. Now, this wasn't a bag of water another of the Pepper Martin tricks?
It sure was, Frank. One evening in Boston, we was all standing outside the hotel on the sidewalk, and Pepper tries to douse us with a big laundry bag full of water. Just as he threw it, Buzzy Wares and manager Frankie Frisch walked out of the hotel, and the bag of water exploded on the sidewalk right between them. Brother Frank and Buzzy could have dried off by jumping into the Charles River.
What'd Frisch do about that?
He went straight up to Martin's room and told Pepper that would cost him $50. But Pepper pleaded with Frank that it was a mistake, that he wasn't trying to hit his dandy little manager. "I'll tell you what I'll do, Mr. Frisch," said Martin, real polite-like. "To show you the high respect I have for you as a gentleman and as a manager, I will win tomorrow's game for you. And I know then that you won't find poor little Johnny." And doggone if that wasn't just what Pepper done. We got only about 3 hits off of Danny McFadden, but one was a home run by Pepper, and we win 1-0.
And did that $50 fine stick, Dizzy?
What do you think, Frank?
Well, I think it's time for you to cast your eye on the big league picture. What do you see today?
Okay, Frank, and I think I've got a good fastening right through the middle of the plate. Let's pass the 2-pennant races this time. They're still red hot, and it's anybody's race. We got time for that next week. Baseball lost a great figure this week, Frank. I'm not going to add anything to what already has been said about Babe Ruth and what he meant to baseball. What I want to talk about is what he will always mean to baseball. Frank, I hear there's a Babe Ruth Foundation to do things to help unprivileged kids. Well, I got a suggestion, and I am talking now to the fathers and big brothers of the country, to the Board of Aldermen and the city councils all over America. Let's form a Babe Ruth Memorial Committee in every city and town and village. And here's the idea. Build an extra baseball diamond in every city and town and call it Babe Ruth Memorial Field. That field will be for the kids to use. If a city has 20 diamonds, one more will help. Call it Babe Ruth Field. And if a town ain't got any baseball field at all for the kids, build one and call it Babe Ruth Field. It'll be a big job, but it can be done. Let's all get together. Somebody in every town appoint himself chairman of a Babe Ruth Memorial Committee, call a meeting, and let's get going.
That's a good idea, Diz, and let's get going now. Folks, we hope you'll be right back with us at this same time next week to listen to Dizzy Dean. He's brought to you by Johnson's Carnew, a wax-fortified auto polish that cleans and polishes your car in one easy application. Rub it on and Carnew cleans your car. Penetrates road film that water won't touch. Dissolves road film right before your eyes. Wipe it off and your car is polished. Carnew makes it look as bright as day and as smooth as silk. Get some Johnson's Carnew today and get a high polish without hard work. Because remember, to give your car that Sunday shine, rub it on and wipe it off is all you do with Carnew.
And this is Old Diz. Hope all you folks on the stands this time next Saturday. I'll be pitching them across again for Johnson's Carnew.
This is Frank Eschen saying goodbye until next Saturday for the makers of Johnson's Wax Fortified Auto Polish, Carnew.
The Dizzy Dean Show, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 21st, 1948 on NBC. This is an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And in this hour of baseball, now an excerpt of Behind the Mic from October 13th, 1940, a Q&A on how baseball used to be broadcast on radio.
Letters from listeners. Each week we invite the listeners of Behind the Mic to write us questions about radio and the three or four we consider to be of most general interest. We have answered on the air by the radio editor of some outstanding newspaper or magazine. Tonight's questions will be answered by Miss Betty Coakley, radio editor of the New York Herald Tribune. James J. Connery of Bristol, Long Island asks, how are baseball games broadcast when the announcers are not at the actual game and in some instances not even in the city where the game is taking place?
Well, Mr. Connery, in some broadcasts of baseball games, the sportscaster is sitting in the studio receiving reports of the game as it progresses through Western Union tickers. A real baseball expert knows enough about the idiosyncrasies of the players, their habits when at the plate and in the field, and all color material necessary to recreate the game so that the listener at home imagines he is actually hearing the real game. Sound effects of the crack of ball on bat, crowd noises, and so forth are produced by records, which give the broadcast an authentic background.
Thank you, Miss Coakley, for answering those questions. Thank you.
An excerpt of Behind the Mic from October 13th, 1940 on the NBC Blue Network. Now an excerpt of Can You Imagine That with the story of the origin of baseball from March 15th, 1940.
Play ball!
Play ball, the watchword of the great American game, baseball. But is it the great American game? Well, let's see. When the early settlers in America came to the New World, they brought with them two ancient English games, cricket and rounders. From these games, young boys developed a sort of embryonic forerunner of baseball in which the teams, composed of a catcher and a pitcher, took turns at hitting the ball. The team hitting the ball the greater number of times and a specified number of tries at bat was declared the winner. In 1839, a group of young men in Cooperstown, New York, assembled for a session of this rather crudely organized sport. Among them was a young fellow named Abner Doubleday.
Wait, boys, I have an idea.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, we've been playing this rather silly game for some time.
Silly? Why, Abner, I thought you enjoyed it.
Well, I do, Alex. Or rather, I did enjoy it, but I think I found a better game.
Oh, yeah? What do you mean?
Well, here's the way it goes. Look, I fetched this flat slab of stone with me.
Well, what's that for?
Well, my idea is to place this stone about 50 feet away from where we stand to hit the ball. Mm-hmm. And after we make a hit, we'll run for the stone. And then the pitcher or catcher can try to touch the runner or throw the ball at him and try to hit him with the ball. And if the runner is touched by the pitcher or catcher or hit by the ball, his team is out. And the other team tries the same procedure. Well, what do you think of it?
Well, what'll we call this stone? It doesn't sound right to call it just a stone or a slab.
Oh, I've thought of that, too. Uh-huh. Let's call it a base.
And so this 20-year-old lad can be credited with the origin of the great American game. Originally, the game was called One Old Cat. Then, when two bases were included, it was called Two Old Cat. Finally, when a friend of Abner Doubleday, Alexander Cartwright, a student of draftsmanship, became dissatisfied with the haphazard placing of the bases, he laid out what he called a baseball square, placing all bases 90 feet apart. And to this day, that is the exact measurement of the official baseball diamond. I think you'll find it interesting, too, that Abner Doubleday can be credited with two firsts in history. Not only did he create the game of baseball, but as a graduate of West Point, he found himself second in command of Fort Sumter at the outset of the American Civil War and distinguished himself as the man who fired the first shot in its defense in 1861. Today, the plot of ground where Abner Doubleday and his teammates first played baseball in Cooperstown, New York, is called Doubleday Field. So I imagine it's still proper to call baseball a great American game.
An excerpt of the syndicated series Can You Imagine That? From March 15, 1940. Now, what would an hour of baseball on old-time radio be without probably one of the most famous comedy routines about the game from Abbott and Costello?
All right, hey, Abbott.
Hey, Abbott.
No,
What's the matter?
My new baseball suit. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
All right, now, don't get
excited.
Are
you the manager of this baseball team?
Yes.
Well, now that I'm down here for spring training, I would like to know some of the guys' names on the team, so when I meet them on the street or the ballpark, I'll be able to say, hello.
Well, naturally, I'll introduce you to the boys, and a regular bunch of boys we have. But you know, strange as it may seem, they give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
Funny names.
Strange names, nicknames, pet names.
Well, tell me the fellow's name.
Well, now, let's see. We have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I'm saying, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You know the guy's names?
I should.
Well, who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who is on first?
Well, what are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who is on first?
Have you got a contract with the first baseman?
Yes.
Who signed the contract?
Well, naturally, you wouldn't expect anyone else to sign it.
But who?
Yes.
So who signed it?
Yes, absolutely.
Look, when you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
Who gets it?
Absolutely. Sometimes his wife comes down and gets it.
Whose wife?
Yes. After all, he's entitled to it.
Who is?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the fellow's name on first base?
Oh, no, wait a minute. What is on second base?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
One base at a time, please.
Don't change the players
I'm
around.
I'm not changing anybody. I'm only asking you, what is the fellow's name on first base?
No, wait a minute. What is on second
base? I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. We're not talking about him. Now, wait a minute.
How did I get on third base?
You mentioned his name.
If I mentioned a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
Never mind first. I want to know what's the fellow's name on third base.
No, what's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go. Back to third again.
Look,
will you stay on third base and don't go off it?
What do you want me to do?
I want to know who was playing third base.
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
Now, who am I putting on third base?
Yes, but we don't want him there.
You don't want who there?
No.
So what's the fellow's name belongs there?
No, what belongs on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. Look, Abbott, please, have you got an outfield?
Naturally.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I don't know. I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
But tell me who's playing left field.
No, who's playing first?
Stay out of the infield.
Oh, don't mention the names out here.
What's the left fielder's name?
No, what's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Third base.
And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field. He plays as well as I do.
You gotta have a pitcher on the team.
Naturally.
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow are you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen. Who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say. Who's on first?
Have it your own way. Go ahead.
I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know. Third
base. Base.
You got a catcher?
Certainly.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today, and tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
That's all we got is a couple of days
well,
on the team.
Well, I can't help that.
You know, I'm a catcher, too.
I know that.
Now, I'll get behind the plate. I'll do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and the heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Home run, Paul Douglas.
All
what
right.
What a home run hitter.
So?
Tomorrow throws the ball. Douglas bunched the ball. Now, when he bunched the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about!
Well, that's all you have to do.
Just to throw at the first base.
So?
Who's got it?
Naturally.
Look, Abbott, who's got it?
Naturally.
Naturally. Excuse me. I pick up the ball. I throw it to naturally.
No, wait a minute. You throw the ball to first base. Then who gets it?
Naturally.
That's it.
I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No, wait a minute.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now you ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's
same
it.
As you! Look, now I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball so the guy runs the second. Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws to, I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow? Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third, and I don't give a darn.
What was that?
I said, I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
Oh, that's silly.
Abbott and Costello with one of their most famous routines about baseball on Tuned to Yesterday from one of the earliest surviving recordings of that skit from April 19, 1942 on the Armed Forces radio show Command Performance. Now to wrap up this hour of true history with a focus on baseball on Tuned to Yesterday, it's a broadcast of the Cavalcade of America called Big Boy, the story of Babe Ruth, an NBC episode from September 29, 1947.
The DuPont Cavalcade of America, starring Brian Donlevy. Tonight, the DuPont Company brings you Big Boy, starring Brian Donlevy on the Cavalcade of America. First, here is Gain Whitman.
Good evening. Step into fall with a bright, cheery, new-looking home. Paint your walls with Speed Easy, the easy-to-use resin oil emulsion paint. You'll be amazed at how little it costs to paint an average-sized room. Just thin Speed Easy with water and apply over wallpaper or any interior wall surface. It comes in white and 11 attractive colors. Remember, it's speedy, it's easy. It's Speed Easy, one of the DuPont Company's better things for better living through chemistry.
Now, Big Boy, starring Brian Donlevy as Babe Ruth on the Cavalcade of America.
Excuse me, mister. Is this seat taken?
No, it's not, son.
Thanks.
Got here early, eh?
Yes, sir. I wanted to get here before he did.
Me too.
Where's he gonna sit?
That box down there, below us.
Yeah? Gee, you know, I did never see him play.
No, I guess you didn't. How old are you, son?
13.
That'd make you about 1 year old when he put away his bat for good.
You see him play?
Sure did. Mr. Baseball himself.
Gee, Babe Ruth. You know a lot about him, huh?
Yeah, I guess I do. Many's the day I sat in these stands and watched the Bambino bust fences.
Yeah. Gee, he was lucky. Played baseball all the time. Me, I gotta go to school.
Well, now, it was the school that started the Babe in baseball.
You're kidding.
No, no, I'm not.
Ah, go on.
No, no, really, Sean, really. I do know a lot about him. Hey, look, we got maybe half an hour before game time. How would you like me to tell you about the Babe?
Well, okay, go ahead.
All right, son. Well, my story about the Babe starts when he was younger than you. I guess he was about, seven. Nobody called him Babe then. His name was George. George Herman Ruth. Was in Baltimore. Just about the turn of the century.
It's a cinch. Sure, he ain't looking. So we walk up and take a couple apples.
Gee, George, what if he sees us?
What if he does? We run fast. What's the matter? Got cold feet?
No, I ain't.
Then come on.
Now, easy now. Pretend like we're going past, and then make a grab. And this time, pick the ripe ones.
Yeah, all right. Now.
Got one.
Me too.
Hey, what's the matter, you kids? Hey, police! They're stealing my apples! The police!
He's coming after us, George. You go one way and I'll cut through the alley. Go on, run! Hey, look out.
Just a minute, young man. You almost knocked me over.
Listen, I'm in a hurry.
You must be, with a handful of apples.
Listen, I gotta go.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You caught him, Father, huh? He's a bad boy.
Hello, Giuseppe. What's the trouble?
This a kid. This a George Root.
Oh, this is George, huh?
Let me go. Take your old apples.
Every day's a steal of my apples.
Let me go.
Oh, just a minute here. Just a minute. I'll pay for the apples. All right, Giuseppe?
Well, all right, Father. You pay me when you want. Arrivederci.
Thanks, so you're George Ruth. you know, I was looking for you, George. Someone told me you might be where the pickings were good.
What you want me for?
I want to talk to you, George.
I don't want to.
Oh, now that was a perfectly good apple. You didn't have to throw it, did you? I don't think so.
Who are you?
Well, I'm Brother Matthias from St. Mary's Industrial School.
School?
That was a pretty fair toss for that apple, George. You're a southpaw, huh?
What about it?
You know, the school could use a lefty on the baseball team.
Baseball?
Well, sure, we got several teams. But I don't think we got a single southpaw.
You got baseball teams there?
You bet. As a matter of fact, one of the school teams is playing this afternoon. Now, if we were to walk this way, we'd pass right by the lot. It should be about the second inning.
So, George Herman Ruth went to St. Mary's Industrial School.
And played baseball?
Well, not all the time. He learned the tailoring trade, too. But baseball was what he liked best. He turned out to be a pretty good pitcher, too. He coached teams at St. Mary's for many years, and the kids loved him. They loved the big, broad-shouldered guy who taught them the game, gave them pointers, worked with them all he could. And then, one day when he was older, Brother Matthias spoke to him.
Come in and sit down, George.
Thanks, Brother Matthias.
But, George, you're a young man now.
Yeah, I guess I am. Never thought about it, though.
We have. And about your future?
Future?
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'd like the tailoring trade?
Well...
Oh, I see. You don't, huh?
Not so much.
You'd rather play baseball, huh?
I guess I would, Brother Matthias.
Well, George, remember one thing. The game itself isn't everything. Oh, it's a great game. And we stress it here because it teaches fair play, sportsmanship.
Yes, sir, I know.
And you've got to have those things for the real game. The game of life. You remember that?
I will, Brother Matthias.
I know. We've watched you, George. And we've got a hunch that someday a lot of folks will feel the same as we do. That you'll be an inspiration to others, as you are to the kids here.
I hope so.
Now, Brother Gilbert at Mount St. Joseph has arranged for someone to come here to see you tomorrow.
Who is it?
Well, you'll see tomorrow. But I'll tell you this now. It's got a lot to do with your future. Well, there he is, Mr. Dunn. You see the big fellow, the southpaw?
You think he's good, Brother Matthias?
Yes, I do, but then... You know more about it than I do, Mr. Dunn.
Well, maybe. All right, get him over here, will you?
Yes. George? George? Come here a minute, will you, please?
Played every position on the team, huh?
Yes, and well. But we think he's better as a pitcher.
We'll see.
Hello, Brother Matthias. Say, that new kid Johnny's shaping up pretty good. I think he'd make a good infielder.
George, I want you to meet Mr. Dunn.
Oh, how are you, Mr. Dunn?
Fine, George. How are you?
Well, I've got some work inside. I'll leave you with Mr. Dunn.
Sure, I'll see you later.
Brother Gilbert of Mount St. Joseph tells me you like baseball.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, let's see. Give me a catcher's mitt.
You gonna play?
Mm-hmm. Now, get out to the pitcher's box.
Well, what do you want me to do?
Toss me the fastest ball you've got.
Fastest? You're gonna catch it?
You toss it. I'll do my best with it.
All right. Here it comes.
Yeah, that's your best? Wouldn't have dented a cream puff.
All right, try this one.
Yeah, that's more like it. Now let's see your curve.
All right, here's the best I can do.
Okay, George, come on in.
How was the curve?
Could be improved, I guess.
I'm sorry you didn't like it, Mr. Dunn.
Oh, it was good, son, but remember, most everything can be improved. You don't want to forget that when you're playing with the Baltimore Orioles.
When I'm what?
I'm Jack Dunn.
Jack Dunn.
I manage the Orioles.
Well, I know, but you want me to play for you?
And get paid for it. $600 a year. That sound all right?
$600?
What's the matter? Don't you like it?
Oh, sure, you bet, but I was just thinking.
What about?
Well, about whether I can make good as a professional.
I think so, son, but it's entirely up to you.
Just about finished packing, George?
Oh, just a couple more things, Brother Matthias.
You excited?
I feel kind of funny in my stomach. Guess I'm afraid.
Of what? That you won't make good?
Maybe. But most of all, I hate leaving here.
I know, George. But about making good, you can't miss if you always remember one thing.
What's that?
Come here at the window. What do you see out there?
Just the kids? Why?
Well, those kids will see that you made good.
They will? I don't understand.
They idolize you, George, because you stand for everything they think is good. Swell, as they put it. And someday they'll look up to you as a hero. So, George, you have to make good.
Well, son, Babe went to the Orioles, and he made good, all right. His salary was tripled after the first few months. Then he was sold to the Major Leagues, Boston Red Sox. In 1915, Ruth hit his first home run at Fenway Park against the Yankees. He was a pitcher then, too, don't forget. And in 1918, the Red Sox won another World Series, and Babe Ruth topped the great Christy Mathewson's record by pitching 29 consecutive scoreless innings of World Series play. How do you like that? And then in 1919, in the office of Pop Barrow, the manager of the Red Sox...
Babe, I've got something to talk over with you.
All right, Pop, what about?
I think your pitching days might be over.
Say that again, Pop.
Get that silly look off your face. There's nothing wrong.
But you just said...
How'd you like to play every day instead of once or twice a week?
Pitch every day?
Nope. In right field.
Hmm? In the outfield? Uh-huh. But, Pop, look at my pitching record.
Hey, right now, I'm looking at your batting average. I could use that big bat in the lineup every day.
Well, I kind of like pitching, Pop.
I know. But it's up to you, Babe. One way, you take your regular turn on the mound, and the other... You're in every day.
What do you say, Pop?
I told you. I could use that big bat.
And that's it. You're the boss.
Swell. Besides, the kids will be seeing more of you if you play every day. You know, you've become sort of an idol to them around here.
That's nice to hear.
And that right field spot is a great place for the kids.
Yeah, that's right. There's lots of them out there.
I think there'll be more now.
And Pop Barrow was right. The Babe's bat began to pound the horse hide. That big swing and then the crack as the ball sailed out. Oh, it was music. And what music? It wasn't long before Babe's pitching record was put in the shade by his hitting. Outfielders kept backing up. Pitchers got a little nervous when the big boy came to the plate. And you know, the Babe set a record that everyone swore would stand up. 29 homers in one season.
Gosh.
Well, there wasn't a team in the circuit that wouldn't have given anything to have the Babe in the lineup. And then, one day, again in Barrow's office...
But, Pop, I don't get it. You're letting me go.
I don't want to, Babe, but you've been sold.
But I don't want to leave. I like the Sox, and I like being with you.
You think I like losing you? But it still goes. You've been sold for $125,000.
Who paid that much?
The Yankees.
But I... The Yankees? But, Pop, they've never won a flag.
I know. But Jake Rupert's buying players to win one, and you're...
Selling me to a team that never won a pennant.
Now, listen, Babe. It's not the team, it's the game. You'll be playing under a great little manager, Miller Huggins. I think this is your big chance.
Well, if that's the way it is, I guess there's no changing it.
Your salary will be $20,000. That's twice what it is now.
But I still hate to leave. What's so funny, Pop?
Nothing's funny. I'm just thinking. If you think there were a lot of kids in Boston, wait till you get to New York. And something else. Don't let them down, Babe. Even though you're good enough to be worth $125,000.
Pop, if I ever let the kids down, I wouldn't be worth a nickel. Not even to myself.
We're listening to Big Boy, starring Brian Dunleavy as Babe Ruth on The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry.
Sold to the Yankees for $125,000, Babe Ruth starts his first season with the New York Yankees in 1920. Now, our story continues as the old-timer in the stands tells a 13-year-old boy the story of the great Bambino.
You remember that record the Babe hung up with the Red Sox, 29 homers in one season?
Yeah.
Well, son, the first season with the Yanks, the Babe clouded 54 homers.
Gee.
Oh, that was nothing. In 1921, his second season, 59 balls sailed out of the park, Ruth starting them on their way. And by 1923, when the Yankee Stadium was built, people were calling it the house that Ruth built. And it was just after a game there when Ruth left the locker room.
Well, so long, you guys. See you tomorrow.
So long, Babe.
Hey,
Hello, George. Brother Matthias.
How are you, George?
Oh, it's good to see you. How are you?
Just fine.
You didn't come all the way to New York just to see me, did you?
Well, yes, but mainly to find out something.
Huh? What?
Let's go outside.
Oh, sure, right down the corridor here. My car's at the side. Maybe we'll go for a little ride and talk.
Yeah, I'd like that.
You said you came to find out something. What?
Well, Brother Gilbert and I have watched your career, the career of the greatest player in the game. Of course, we may be prejudiced.
That could be. But what did you come to find out?
Whether you made good or not.
Made good, but you just said...
That you were a great ball player, yes. But there's something else.
Oh, here, we go out this way.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, there he is. Hi, babe.
Hey, babe, sign this for me, will you, babe?
Come on, please.
Yeah, come on, babe.
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute, fellas.
Hey, what?
Who was here first?
Me. I was here first.
Wait a minute. Will you take it easy? Hey, listen. I've got a very important friend with me today, and I haven't seen him for a long time. I tell you what. Suppose you all come back tomorrow, and I...
We've been waiting all day, babe.
Oh, all right. I tell you what. Hey, Sammy, get a flock of balls, good ones, and give them to the kids, will you? Is that all right, fellas?
Oh, boy, sure.
Okay, swell. I'll see you tomorrow.
You bet.
They're standing there every day. I get a big kick out of them.
Yes, I see that.
Now, what were you saying about wanting to find out something?
I just did, George. I just found out that you have made good. The most important way. With the kids.
That was the real Babe Ruth. Standing out in right field, joking with the kids in the stands, hitting home runs for them, never forgetting them.
Must have felt awful good to be that famous.
I guess so. And you know, the Babe set a record for home runs, 60 of them in one season.
Gosh.
But I don't think that the 60th homer meant as much to him as just one other. It was the whole 60 rolled up into one.
How was that?
Well, I'll tell you this way. It was one day that the Babe and a man named Sylvester walked into a hospital.
You see, Mr. Ruth, my son's seriously ill. The doctor says medicine's done all it can for Johnny. And now he needs a boost to his morale. He's got to have something to hang on to look forward to.
I see, but what about me? Where do I come in?
Well, you're his hero. And maybe seeing you will help him. Ever since he was old enough to understand baseball, it's been Babe Ruth. And the one thing he wanted most in the world was to see you knock a home run.
Well, I'm glad you came to me.
His room's right here. You go on in. I'll wait outside.
Okay, Mr. Sylvester.
I'm sorry, sir, but Johnny's not allowed visitors.
It's all right, nurse. I've got permission. Hiya, Johnny.
Huh? I know you. Babe Ruth. Gee. You sick, Mr. Ruth?
No, I came to see you. And how about call me Babe? I'll call you Johnny.
To see me?
Sure. Brought you something. Look.
A baseball.
Yep. American League baseball and a bat.
Like yours?
Well, it's something like it, but maybe a little lighter than mine. Here's a glove, too. Now you're all set up. Just as soon as you get better, you'll be able to go out using them.
Gee.
You're gonna get better, huh?
I'll try hard, Mr. Ruth.
You bet.
I'll try as hard to get better as you do to get a homer.
Then that'll do it.
Is it hard to hit a homer, Babe?
No, it's as easy as falling off a log. Almost as easy as it is for you to get better.
Is that easy? I'm pretty sick, I guess.
Look, I'll tell you what, Johnny. If I hit a homer for you this afternoon, just to show you how easy it is, will you try just as hard to get better?
I sure will.
Okay, it's a deal. Now, you just listen on your radio.
Would you mind autographing this baseball for me, please?
Why, sure. Here. To Johnny, I'll knock a homer for you. Babe Ruth.
Thanks. Gee, thanks a lot, Babe.
It's okay, kid. Now remember, you and I got a bargain.
Is Is it good for Johnny to have that radio on, Doctor?
Yes, leave it on. He's shown more interest than he has in days. How's it going, Johnny?
Gee, Doctor, the Babe's coming up again.
And coming from the Yank dugout is the big boy, the Babe. He's been up twice today, struck out twice. If he's going to hit, it'll have to be this time. His last at bat for the day. Now he's walking to the plate, and Miller Huggins walks over to talk to him. The Babe looks mighty serious today.
Hey, Babe, now, wait a minute. I want to talk to you, Babe.
Yeah, what is it,
Huggins? What's the matter with you today? You're pressing too hard.
Yeah, I know.
So what if you don't clout one out the games in the bag?
Not for me, Hug. I got to hit a homer today.
Take it easy. Tomorrow's another day.
Tomorrow will be too late.
Well, well, the big boy. Back again, Babe.
Uh-huh.
The Indian sign's on you today, big fella. Why don't you sit down and save the trouble of coming up to the plate?
You stick to catching and keep your eyes on that apple.
All right, Ed. Let him have it. The big boy's got dust in his eyes today. Only two more to go, Babe. All right, Ed. The big one now. Can't argue about that one, Babe. Zip right down the middle. No answer?
The next pitch, Johnny. The next pitch.
Oh, we got the big boy talking to himself. Here he comes again, Babe. Watch it.
You satisfied, Babe?
Yeah, I am, Huck.
I don't get it. I've seen you knock out three in one game, break your own record, and help us win pennants. Now you happen to knock out one in the game in the bag, and you look like the cat that got the canary.
You don't get it, Huck. That was the most important home run I ever hit.
Well, son, Johnny got better, all right.
That must be him.
It is. The Bambino himself.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. Sitting in the stands today, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the greatest of them all. The one and only Sultan of Swat, the Bambino himself, Babe Ruth.
What, son?
I got a baseball here. Why don't the Babe sign it for me?
Why not ask him?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he'd think it was fresh or something.
No, not the Babe. Go on, son. Go on down and ask him.
I will. Excuse me, sir.
That's all right.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Ruth.
Oh, hiya, kid.
Mr. Ruth, I wonder if you'd autograph this for me.
Sure thing. Come on in here. That's the idea. Now, let's see that ball. Hey, that's pretty scuffed. We can do better than that. Hey, Mike.
Sure.
Mike, toss the ball up here, will you, Goodwin?
Sure thing, Babe. Here you come.
That's better. I'll sign it later, kid. You all alone?
Yes, sir.
Okay, stay here and watch the game with me.
Gee.
Play ball.
Hear that, kid? The greatest sound in the world. Nothing like it. Just nothing like it.
And the Babe goes on, never to be forgotten. A colorful reality to those who saw him play, a living legend of inspiration to those who didn't. And as another World Series opens tomorrow, there are those who will sit in the stands and remember the crack of his bat, the Babe trotting around the bases, that big grin on his face, Mr. Baseball himself. Cavalcade would like to take this opportunity to announce that the Babe Ruth Foundation, Incorporated,
A long-cherished dream of Babe Ruth to help American youth has been recently formed. Yesterday, Old Stars Day at the Yankee Stadium, the New York Yankees and the Philadelphia Athletics turned over their portion of the day's gate receipts to this worthy charity, the Babe Ruth Foundation Incorporated. Pledge to the best interest of, as the Babe puts it, the kids of America.
If you were a lawyer and a boy was accused of stealing your car, would you defend him in court? A man named James West did. He did so for two reasons, two dramatic and exciting reasons. You'll hear those reasons next Monday night when we bring you Henry Fonda starring in Of Such Is the Kingdom on the DuPont Cavalcade of America. The music for the DuPont Cavalcade is composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Our Cavalcade play was written by Bryce Disk, Jr. Brian Donlevy may currently be seen in the United Artists picture, Heaven Only Knows. The motion picture, The Babe Ruth Story, will be produced and directed by Roy Del Ruth and will be released by Allied Artists Productions from the autobiography of Babe Ruth with Bob Considine.
The Cavalcade of America, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 29th of September, 1947 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of True History with a focus on baseball on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBounier. Thanks for tuning in.